Hey everyone, before we get started, I'm excited to share that registration is now open for our third annual Design Biz Retreat, which will be held in Orange County, California this year, October 20th through the 21st. This two-day gathering of design visionaries and industry experts demonstrates the true meaning of community and how it's redefining the way interior design professionals are building stronger and more profitable businesses. This year we'll feature presentations on selling luxury, the client experience, generating referrals, partnering with custom home builders, and the state of the luxury market. Visit our website for all the details and sign up today because there are only 24 seats available for this exclusive learning opportunity. Now on with the show. Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge our sponsors who help keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. I'm especially excited to announce the opening of their newest showroom in Mission Viejo and the upcoming grand opening of their showroom in the Laguna Design Center. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. Today, we welcome co-owner and principal designer of Thomas Guy Interiors, Lance Thomas. In this episode, Lance shares how his HGTV debut rekindled his love for design and prompted the development of his Louisiana-based interior design firm. We also discuss how the firm's simple yet effective pricing structure allows them to work on large projects with a small team by eliminating so much of the unnecessary details that bog down the creative design process. Lance shares openly about the hot topic of maintaining a storefront and how it can benefit your visibility, flexibility, and profitability. Be sure to have your notepad ready because Lance also shares a few of his favorite business tools that help keep his design biz running full steam ahead. So Lance, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you.
Thanks so much. I'm excited.
All the way from Louisiana. We've never had anyone from Louisiana on the show before, so this is a first.
Uh-oh, that's a lot of pressure. We'll see how this goes.
Representing Louisiana.
That's right.
No pressure at all. So Lance, we had the pleasure of meeting in High Point, and it was such a treat to connect with you. And then we've spoken since, and I'm excited to have you on the podcast so that we can share a little bit about your journey. I think it's going to be so inspiring for the listeners. But before we dive into all of that and the business of design, tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, just to kind of get everyone up to speed.
Well, my name is Lance Thomas. I'm co-owner and principal designer at Thomas Guy Interiors. We're in a small town of about 60,000 people in Lake Charles, Louisiana, on the coast. Most people know us from casinos and oil manufacturers, so that's sort of where I'm from. I co-own it with my fiance, Drew, and hopefully we'll be tying the knot sometime this year. But every time we say we're going to do so, a new job comes up. So we put it on the back burner. So we have a small studio here in Lake Charles. And by the grace of God, I guess, we've been able to do a lot of really great work and Dallas and Flower Mound and Scottsdale and Colorado and all kinds of fun places. So, you know, the small town boys are kind of getting out in the big cities. So that's what we're doing.
Nice, nice. Now, are you just doing work in your general area or other states as well? Are you all over the place?
Yeah, a lot of our jobs kind of have extended to friends and relatives and referrals in other cities. So that's typically, you know, when we get out of Louisiana, it's usually because of a referral from somebody that has a relative in Colorado or Scottsdale or something that we take the job.
Great, great. And what about school? So did you go to design school? Like, how did it all start? Did you always aspire to be an interior designer?
Yeah. So I think it kind of was in the blood. My mom was a fantastic decorator, not as a career. She was a teacher, but she kind of taught me the elements of design and decorating. And it was kind of what we bonded over growing up. It's really funny that she kind of knew this was going to be where I ended up because I was always a good kid. But the first time I ever got punished, she sent me to my room. And when she came back to tell me that my punishment was over, I completely redecorated it. So she always knew that there would be something creative in the midst for me. But I actually went to college at Vanderbilt in Nashville. No background in interior design at all. Kind of went forward and got two master's degrees in graphic design. So I was going to go into the sort of advertising graphic design trade. And then just some crazy opportunities kind of presented themselves and kind of took me down, I guess, my, you know, sort of path of interior design. I know we briefly talked about it, but I ended up on a little reality show called White Room Challenge, which was a spinoff from Design Star on HGTV. I did not win. spoiler alert. The other contestants were, you know, using like really handy tools like tape measures and fabric swatches. And I was measuring by the lengths of my arms and legs to see how big, you know, the space was. So I was a little fish out of water, but it was kind of my first taste at, you know, decorating and design. It just so happened to be on national television. So after that, it kind of projected me to kind of pursue that path and that career. I really loved it. And it kind of reminded me of, you know, my humble beginnings with my mom decorating. So from there, I just kind of went full force and made a career out of it.
Nothing like learning lessons on national TV.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Well, did that experience make you want to be on TV again? Or would you say that was just kind of like a been there, done that sort of thing? I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I mean, I definitely would not turn it down. I know a lot of people think that Drew and I's business would be great TV because it's so fun to be in a relationship with your business partner. But no, I think what it really did was made me see the reality behind all those TV shows. Yeah. And it's great now being able to have that in my back pocket to let clients know that, you know, kind of what you see on TV is not always how the process goes. And so establishing a process with clients, having that sort of experience in my back pocket has really helped to articulate to them, like, that's not how things really go in this business. So here's the reality of, you know, reality television. So that was kind of the biggest takeaway I got from that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good lesson because a few years ago, maybe five or 10 years ago, I would have had a different opinion. But now that consumers really are, that TV is their point of reference. Yeah. And so you really need to be prepared to respond to that. And what better way than having actually been on the set, you know? So I used to always tell people, if you want to be on HGTV, then go to acting school. If you want to be a designer, then stay in design school. But right. Now I understand the kind of rite of passage attached to it. And if you have that opportunity to really see what it's like, I guess you don't know what it's like until you're in it.
You know? Yeah, you really don't. And, you know, turnaround times and how the process actually works. I mean, a lot of clients think, oh, well, you know, they did that entire house in a week. How come my house isn't done in a week? And it's like, well, that's TV. That's not real. That's, you know, that's not how it goes. So we've been able to really manage expectations based on my experience on HGTV.
Right. Because what they don't know is that you also didn't sleep that week.
Right.
And you had a team of people at your disposal who also didn't sleep that week.
Exactly. And so producers yelling, cut, you messed up, restart, do it again. Like, you don't really have that chance.
Yeah, which you don't get to do in real life.
Right, exactly.
So what does your team look like now? What is your kind of business structure, and what is your sweet spot when it comes to design, like a typical project?
So for a while, it was just myself, my sister, and my mom, and one other creative sort of partner that we kind of shared a showroom and retail store and kind of had our own clients at our own thing, kind of separate from each other, and just kind of used that space as a shared sort of inventory. But in the past couple years, Drew came on board, and he and I have really pushed with Thomas Guy. And we now have one sort of associate designer. And then we've got coming on board with our new showroom opening later this month. We'll have sort of an apprentice of sorts and social media managers and publicists and all that good stuff that goes with it. But in-house, we are a 3-4 person team. Mm-hmm. Our business model, you know, I think took a lot of learning, but after about 10 years, you know, we've kind of, in my opinion, done a really good job of working with a small team, but doing really big projects and really big sort of scopes. And it's come down to sort of a, not controversial, but a little bit different than what most people and how they style their business. But one interesting thing about Thomas Guy is the whole sort of budget conversation for a business for us, we don't really go into with our clients. We basically give them a percentage of the build cost. This is what it's going to cost to furnish your home. And then from there, they really don't see numbers. It allows, you know, our team to really design beautiful spaces within a given budget and not have to have all the other people that are involved. You know, 2 or 3 people can really manage a larger project whenever you aren't so strict on this is how much I'm going to spend on lighting. This is how much I'm going to spend on this. When we can kind of work backwards on an overall number or range and our clients kind of agree to that, then the three of us can really focus on giving the best product to our clients and not be bogged down with all of the sort of numbery things. And so that has really worked for a smaller team for us and in the presentation style. So, you know, we've got just a small little group, but we pack a punch.
Cool. I love that. And you know what? And that approach is very interesting. So it's a percentage of the build of the budget overall. And whatever that is. So you basically establish a number and you say, this is how much it's going to cost to furnish your home. Obviously, you provide them with a conceptual design and all of that yeah. they approve so that you're on the same page. But when it comes down to the minutia of purchasing, specifying and purchasing and all those things, the client kind of steps away from that and they just say, hey, listen, as long as you achieve this overall budget or overall vision, pardon me, that we approved, we'll be in good shape.
Yeah. And, you know, we give ourselves, we're very transparent in how we run our business. So typically for us, we kind of budget in about 20 to 30% of the entire build cost is what we know that we can put the best product together for our clients. So if you're building a $2 million home, we know it's going to cost around $300,000 to get that whole thing down to the last fillet on the frame, you know, that piece of art, you know, the turnkey done. That's about what it's going to cost. And typically our initial presentation is within that. And if they decide, oh, I really want this antique chandelier that might have pushed things over that sort of range, they know that that's coming. So there's no real sort of surprises. You know, they're aware, okay, I'm about to spend X amount. This is what it's going to get me. When they see the final product and they see the renderings and they see all the different spec sheets and plans, they don't necessarily know that that rug may be $12,000, but you know, it doesn't matter because it's within what they're looking for. So we don't get bogged down with the minutia of what each individual piece of art and tchotchke may cost. And that way we can really focus on the overall big picture. And I think our clients don't like to stress about it either. So that if they know that we're going to be within a certain budget and I can get this look for that, then they say full speed ahead and we can just kind of power through and put together the best product.
I love that concept. And I've spoken to other design business owners who have a similar, you know, approach to design where it allows them to kind of shop high and low, be very creative, be very resourceful, and achieve a really incredible look. And the finished look is always amazing. And in my experience, you know, we spent a lot of time sharing all of the information with the client because they, well, I thought they wanted to know, but in hindsight, I wonder if they really wanted to know.
Right. It's true. 100% you're right on point with that. I mean, I think in hindsight, the client would rather, in my opinion, you know, not know all the minutiae that goes into it because it overwhelms. I mean, this is what we do for a living. So for us, it doesn't seem overwhelming, but to them, you know, it is all the decisions that go in, the thousands of decisions, and every decision costs money. That all those details can be overwhelming. So if they know that it's going to be a beautiful living room, great. Here's what, you know, about what it's going to cost. They don't have to know that, you know, this trim piece and this contrast well is an upcharge of $300. Da, 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 da. At the end of the day, it's done and it's beautiful. So that's kind of how we can work large with a small team.
Yeah. Because I think going back to the consumer perspective, like they're obligated almost to say, oh, that costs how much to add that? Or this rug costs $12,000, but that costs $2,000. Like as a consumer, you can't just hear that and just let it go. You almost feel obligated to respond to it. So it's almost best that you don't even address it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, and there's times when things, you know, are, we find an antique in France or something that is amazing and it sets the tone for the room, but it's clearly outside the scope of what we think would be an appropriate thing. So we let them know those sort of details and say, look, this cabinet is $40,000, but it's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. This will kind of push us over our general goal target number. Are you comfortable with that or not? And we move on. But for the most part, we kind of, you know, stay within the confines of the vendors that we know and the lines that we carry to keep within a certain sort of bracketed budget frame.
We're taking a quick break to recognize another one of our partners who helps keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Design Manager, the design trade's most reliable project management, purchasing, and accounting platform. The business of design is complex and requires solutions developed specifically for our industry. Design Manager has invested decades responding to the needs of interior design professionals and continues to deliver innovative tools to manage your design business with efficiency and profitability in mind. Visit designmanager.com to start a free 30-day trial of the tool trusted by top interior design firms across the country. Tell me a little bit about Drew's role in the business.
So Drew came on about 4 years ago. I mean, honestly, Thomas Guy wasn't Thomas Guy until he came along. It was really more of a hobby. But now that Drew's on board, he's completely changed the business and my life also. He's amazing. But as the CFO, the person that handles all the brass tacks of ordering and logistics and freight charges and back orders and all the things that can really bog down the creative side. I mean, the obvious sort of bonus of having him as sort of the money man is it allows me, you know, frees up a lot of time for me to be, you know, solely the creative. Mm-hmm. But recently I was thinking about it and I think from the client's perspective, not just from ours, but from the client's perspective, he provides sort of the conversations that they feel comfortable talking about the hard numbers and the brass tacks, and they don't necessarily want to have that conversation with their creative. And I think partially the reason is if I'm here pitching, you know, a design, it's uncomfortable for them to tell the person creating it, I don't want to spend that much money on it. Sorry. And so I think, you know, for him to present, okay, here's our final numbers. Here's where we are. Here's the brass tacks. And he can have those sort of uncomfortable conversations sometimes or talk about back orders, it kind of creates a lane for them to talk with like a financial advisor. You know, they can have those hard conversations and not feel like they're telling their creative, their designer, I don't, you know, there's a personal connection there that I don't like this or I don't want to spend this much money on it. So from a client side, it actually opens up a lot of free dialogue in talking about the hard side of the business, and that's money. And so they feel more comfortable talking to him about that. And I think it also makes them feel more comfortable talking to me about the other stuff. So for the client too, it's provided a really wonderful sort of avenue that they know, I'm unsure about the freight cost on this, let me talk to Drew, because they can have that conversation and not hurt my feelings as the designer and the creative and the buddy-buddy person. It really helps the clients as well. So it's been a fabulous sort of integration into our business.
And I also think too, you know, that separation of roles probably really allows you to just show up and create and do what you do best. Because like you said, those conversations are already happening in the background. If there's an issue or if there's a limitation on budget with either a specific item or a specific, you know, room, it's a conversation that Drew can have with the client and then you and Drew have internally, and you just show up ready to rock and roll.
Exactly. And also too, it allows Drew to say and have those conversations of, look, this item is back ordered. We won't get it in time for install date. Lance found another option. It's a little bit more expensive. Do you feel comfortable doing that before Lance can present it to you? And if they say, great, yeah, it's an extra so-and-so, let's see what he has. Or they say, nope, we're capped out. We don't want to spend it. That way I can go back to the drawing board. And before the presentation, it makes efficiency a whole lot more, you know, available and reasonable as well.
Yeah, those are such great examples of how to really capitalize on that arrangement business-wise. Now, I'm going to ask you a question that I think I already know the answer to, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Was it difficult detaching from that aspect of the business and delegating it to someone else?
You know, it's so funny that my mom actually told me something whenever I was first getting started, and kind of she saw that I was getting bogged down, and I'm not as assertive, I guess, in that avenue. So I was having a hard time telling clients, you know, oh, this is where we are, I'm scared to show you the number, that sort of thing. And she told me that, you know, you can't be everything to everyone. And that's when it finally clicked with me that I can't be the one to talk the numbers and run the logistics and the budgets and track orders and all that stuff. I can't be that and also be the best creative for the client. So I'm doing a disservice by trying to do everything for everyone. So it actually was not difficult. Drew's fantastic at it, and I trust him wholeheartedly with all of that. So passing it along to someone like Drew was very easy. I can imagine having to actually send out, you know, look at resumes and stuff with something you don't know, hiring someone to do that. That could be a little bit difficult, but because it was Drew and because of our unique situation, it was actually a load off.
That was very good advice from your mom, by the way. I officially love her.
Yeah, she's amazing.
So what would you say has been the biggest challenge in during this process of, you know, launching your interior design business? Like over this 10-year process, how has the business of design changed, and like how have you responded to that? Because I know we've come a long way in 10 years, this industry. What has been probably the, you know, biggest challenge that you've overcome?
I think for me, not having the interior design schooling, getting caught up was a huge challenge, but also giving myself a little bit of slack. I think I thought I had to do everything myself, and now I'm learning, you know, times have changed. There are so many incredible apps and programs and tools that allow someone like myself that may not have taken 4 semesters in AutoCAD to actually still be able to provide renders and provide floor plans and all those things. So for a while, that was the largest challenge, was giving myself a little bit of slack and realizing, okay, if I don't know how to do it, then I need to find a program or a tool or a mentor that does, so I can kind of catch up. And so the largest challenge was getting to a place where I actually felt like Thomas Guy was a professional business. And now that we provide the 3D renderings and the smart draws and the floor plans and all that kind of stuff, the finish schedules, you know, it really has pushed our business to be a full-fledged interior design business. And for anyone listening, I can give you a couple of those tools that I've found that really, really work for me.
Yeah, that'd be great.
For like procurement and for finish schedules, that you can have for the painters an entire list of every trim, wall color, ceiling, that kind of thing, flooring, backsplash. There's a program called Folio that we use. There's also Design Manager and a couple others that are incredible tools for cataloging all the decisions that you've made and putting them into one place and being able to sort of source them for whomever may need it. We use Smart Draw for all of our floor planning, which is a great, super easy, you know, novice friendly sort of program. It's AutoCAD is very overwhelming for me. So we use Smart Draw. And then there's also a program called Magic Plan that literally with your phone, you can scan a room and it gives you all the dimensions of every ceiling height, every window, every door opening. It's like literally what it's called, Magic Plan. It is magic.
Wow.
So the time element, not having to take out a tape measure and measure every single curve and turn and door opening, being able to just literally scan the room and it does it all for you and puts it to scale, has allowed us to present that, you know, to clients. And it's really an impressive tool that helps me in kind of overcoming those challenges of how do I do all of these steps alone. So those are a couple of programs that we use. And then Adobe Creative Suite, Photoshop, Illustrator, that kind of thing is where we put all of our presentations together and do all of our renderings. Their tutorials are amazing. So even if you've never used it before, you can start to render sort of rooms with items that you've selected very quickly. So those are sort of the tools that I have found over the years that have really helped overcome those challenges of being sort of granola and green in the business, but having such a passion for it to becoming a real, like, full-fledged professional business.
Thank you for sharing those. That's so important because not everyone out there, you know, had the same journey as others. Not all of us got to spend, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years at design school learning all of those things.
Yeah. And I mean, coming from a small town, I didn't even know that there were even degrees in it. And you know, I had no clue that you could actually go to school to be an interior designer. I didn't know that that was actually like a major or a, you know, you can get a bachelor's in interior design. I had no idea that even existed.
Yeah.
Or I would have probably taken that path, but you know, that's sort of what I have found that really works to help me, you know, be as professional as possible, not having that sort of background.
Excellent. Excellent. So listen, I understand that, you have also rolled out a retail component to your business. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. I actually, years ago with my mom and sister and, other partner at the time, that was actually how we started. I went retail first, actually.
Oh.
Because, you know, I didn't have the jobs or the clients. Everyone wanted to see what an HGTV personality, what, you know, what they liked and what they wanted, you know, what I thought was trending or whatever it may be. So I opened up a retail store years and years and years ago and have since sort of remodeled it a little bit for a design business. And it has been sort of the pinnacle of success for Drew and I, for a couple of reasons. And I'll kind of go into a couple for you. For starters, it's literally a livable 3D walk-in experiential portfolio. Mm-hmm. So when we do vignettes and we put together sort of stories of things that we found and collected along the way, mixed with antiques, people come into the store and sometimes they'll just buy the whole room. They say, well, I love this bed, the nightstand, the lamps. They'll also come in and say, I love, you know, this rug. Can I hire you to finish out the rest of the room? So it's become for us sort of a livable experiential experiencing portfolio. It's a business card. Yeah. So that's one great sort of pro of having a retail store. Another one that it's sort of a dark secret. So just to all of you listeners, the other great thing about having a retail store is, you know, not all design decisions are the right ones. And so having a retail store, if I've selected some dining chairs and they come in and they're just not right for the space and I kind of made a boo-boo, I feel confident that I don't have to go to the client and basically say, oh, these are amazing. I love them. They're great for your space. When I know deep down in my heart that it was not the right decision, having a retail store is, you know, sort of a fail safe. I can put those on my floor. I can mark them at retail and then find something else or pull something off my floor that may replace it better. So it's kind of given me a little bit of freedom to take some risks in my design. And sometimes when they don't pay off, I can put it on my floor and sell it. The last thing that I really wanted to say and has been the best is it allows me to be a stocking dealer. So whenever you have a retail floor and you can actually stock product with vendors, you build these amazing relationships with these vendors. And so when I need to fast track a custom sofa or something, you know, they have a question about and it just sits in their sort of PO orders for, you know, months and months and months, because I have a stocking dealer, you know, relationship with them, I'll get a phone call from Baker, for example, you know, and say, hey, I saw this custom order. It's missing a welt detail. You want to go ahead and, you know, solve that so it doesn't just sit in our PO system forever. And our profit margins are better. As a stocking dealer, we get much better margins on, you know, furniture than, say, a designer discount. So we can offer, you know, very nice, high-end, sort of expensive custom furniture for less than they would actually buy it for clients, and our profit margins better. So it's a win-win for everyone involved. The client gets, you know, custom furniture for less. We make more on it. And so it allows us to build a business model around the fact that we can actually offer product, you know, off our floor for great value, but also great profit margins. So that's been a huge sort of advance for us.
Those are three real good reasons to go into a retail space. Well, because I think that's a conversation that designers are having with themselves all the time right now. And it seems like every other month I'm seeing on Instagram another designer talk about their new retail space or their mini showroom that they're opening. And it's very exciting. And listen, that's how I started my design business as well. I opened a small retail space down on the Balboa Peninsula. And that's really kind of how I marketed myself. And that's how I interacted with, you know, potential clients as they walked through the space. And so I get it. But there's a lot of risks associated with it, but there are also many, many benefits and you have to weigh them. So I appreciate you sharing the benefits because, you know, we need people like you to share that and tell us.
Yeah. And you know, another thing too, it's an expensive initial startup. It's scary because it's not, you know, you have to spend a lot of money to inventory, and that inventory may sit on your floor for a little while. So you're out of a lot of cash for a long time till you start seeing the benefits from it. So that is a huge sort of risk and a con. But I've found, too, that whenever you place certain vendors that you have a relationship, I know we met at Alfonso Marina as I was opening up with them. I'm obsessed with their look and their design, and they are definitely so amazing. They're amazing. I mean, they are amazing. They are definitely more on the expensive end. But there's a huge difference between expensive and overpriced. And so when customers come into our showroom or our retail store and they see an Alfonso Marina piece, and I can see that they really appreciate it, and they look at that price tag and they don't like completely fall over, I know that this could also be a very good potential client for me because they do appreciate, you know, custom handcrafted, beautiful textile, and they know that it's expensive, but they know it's not overpriced. And so it's also a great sort of litmus test for future clients when they come into our store, because I can see how they react to certain brands that we carry. And that can let me know, is this going to be a good relationship or not? Can they appreciate, you know, sort of what we have to offer? So that's another good little insider trick that we use for our retail floors. We use it as a litmus test.
Yeah, for sure. To kind of test those lines that you'd like to use and you want to see how your potential clients are going to respond to them. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, Lance, we've got some signature questions here at the podcast.
Sure.
And you've shared so freely. So
yeah.
What would you say is your secret to survival in the business of design? So over the last 10 years, what has really kept you, what has kept your head above water in the business of design?
You know, I think for me, the one thing that has kept me sort of surviving is, it took me a long time to realize this, but I realized, you know, that there is no mathematical formula for creating something beautiful. And for a long time, I'd get on this rabbit hole of selecting chandeliers or lighting or whatever it may be, literally trying to survive this client. And I would spend hours and hours and hours thinking, well, there might be something better out there. There might seem something better out there. And so I would continually waste a lot of time and energy. And then it finally clicked that, like, there's a ton of beautiful out there. And so to survive in this business, sometimes you just have to realize that there's no mathematical formula. So if you love it and it looks amazing, keep moving forward, because you can really get bogged down in this business thinking that there is some sort of A plus B equals beautiful, and there isn't. There's a ton of beautiful out there, and people want to hire you for your perspective on how you see that. So I have survived this business, you know, realizing that, you know, trust your gut, because there is no mathematical formula to beautiful.
Right. It's an art, not a science. That's for sure. Yeah. And what would you say is the one thing that you know now that you wish you knew then when you decided, hey, I'm going for it, I'm going to be an interior designer?
Well, for starters, the easy one is I wish I knew that there is actually a real career path. I didn't know that. It took me about 15 to 18 years to fall into it. But, you know, I wish I also would have known that transparency and being open and honest with both yourself, but also with your clients, can get you a whole lot further. To being able to admit to a mistake and not try to hide it, dust it underneath the rug or something, you know, clients really appreciate that. We actually have a great process that we use for this exact thing. And I wish I'd have done it from the very beginning. We just implemented it about a year ago. And I think a lot of the listeners that are designers may actually really start to do this. Our first sort of meeting with clients is actually in our own home. And we've realized, and I wish I'd have known this earlier, that, you know, we're about to spend a lot of time with them in their homes. And they are trusting us to come in to, you know, their homes and do a beautiful job. So our first meeting, we invite them into our home. And we have wine and cheese, and we sit down and we discuss, you know, what about our house that they either love or don't, which is fine.
Sure.
But, you know, allowing them into our home has really helped for them to open up and allow us into theirs. So we do that. And I wish we would have done that years ago. And it's fun.
We have to drink wine. Well, heck yeah. I love that approach. And I always tell designers, if you're fortunate enough to have a studio or an office, always have that first meeting in your space. Just right. To kind of, you know, it's your opportunity to show them how you work, how you, not how you entertain, but just how you interact, what it's like to work with you. And they need to get to know you just as much as you need to get to know them.
Absolutely. It's vital. It really is. It's a vital thing to do.
And how would you say that you pay it forward in the business of design? And FYI, you're doing it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really funny, Rick, because whenever I knew this was one of the signature questions, I listened to every one of your podcasts, and I absolutely love them and all of your guests. And so I thought about that for a while, and it's interesting. For me, it's just now starting to surface that I feel as though I have that to offer. For a long time, I never really felt that I was good enough or whatnot to really give back. But now that I'm kind of in a place where I really feel like I do have something to offer, and because of past podcasts as well, this whole mentor thing that you really started trying to go down this road, mm-hmm. I love to entertain, and I think you and I could possibly do something in the future of doing these mentor mixers, which is an idea that I kind of came up with on how to pay it forward that I think would be really fun, almost like speed dating, but for mentors and for, you know, designers looking to learn. And having these mentor mixers, I think it'd be something really fun that we could possibly do in the future to pay it forward. And so that's something that I think I would love to start doing, is offering a social environment for learning. Yeah. And so that's something that could be really interesting to kind of explore. So that's sort of what I would like to start doing to pay it forward.
I love that idea. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Let's come work on that.
Yeah, come to Dallas. Dallas Market. Let's do it.
Heck yeah. Well, I love that. And I love the fact that you are, you know, so willing to share so openly, because that's really what this podcast is all about. It's about, you know, talking about your journey and lessons learned for the benefit of, you know, those out there who are listening and, you know, getting their game together. So I appreciate you being on, and absolutely, I appreciate the time.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
How can we learn more about you? Give us your website and your Instagram.
So our Instagram is Thomas Guy Interiors is our full handle. Our website is thomasguyinteriors.com. It's currently under construction, but it should be up and running end of June. But that's where you'll be able to see all of our wonderful projects and you know, experiences and our day-to-day.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, hey, thanks again, and I'll see you at next market, if not sooner.
Yes, absolutely. Hope to see you soon, Rick.
Thanks.
All right.
It was such a pleasure to reconnect and continue my conversation with Lance on the podcast for all of you to enjoy and benefit from. As we mentioned, Lance and I actually met at the Design Biz Survival Guide Happy Hour in High Point, hosted by our friends at Alfonso Marina. There, we started our conversation about the business of design, and I immediately knew that Lance's journey and experiences would resonate with you all. You probably heard my aha moment when we were discussing his pricing structure and his process of establishing a budget and then working within those parameters to fulfill the design vision while keeping all the little details internal. You know, transparency doesn't have to mean show them everything. Just be prepared to share what they need to know. I used to think that clients wanted to know every detail, but do they really? Think about it. Another big takeaway for me were the words and advice from Lance's mom. You can't be everything to everyone. These words challenged Lance to look inward and embrace his strengths and weaknesses, and prompted him to bring Drew into the mix to help create balance within his business model. By delegating the finances and procurement, Lance was able to refocus on what he does best, design. I warned you that you were going to need a notepad, and I hope that all of you had some big takeaways of your own from our conversation. Thank you, Lance, for sharing so openly, and I look forward to partnering with you on a design mentor mixer soon. Thank you all for joining us for another episode of Design Biz Survival Guide, and until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.